Good afternoon. You are tuned in to a June afternoon here for Friday, the 26th of August, 2016. I'm Jeff Brown with you today. We'll be talking with Amy Page about the Girls on Run fundraiser. We'll talk with Rachel Utzler about Saturday's Food Fest at the Jack. We'll learn about Sunday's Blue Mass. And we'll talk with Jennifer Brown and Eric Dobson about upcoming Cub Scout activities. That writer's almanac, Burnout Music, and more on a June afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, partly cloudy skies, low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Saturday, sunny weather with high temperatures in the mid-70s. Forecast for Saturday night, partly cloudy skies, and Sunday mostly cloudy skies, so enjoy it while you can.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes in for Antonio Gonzalez. The backers of the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline lack a key permit to complete construction. The Bismarck Tribune reports Army Corps of Engineers officials confirm Energy Transfer Partners does not have a written easement to build on Corps property. A Corps spokesman tells the paper the agency issued permission for the easement to be written, but that is still under review. Meanwhile, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is supporting the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and other tribal nations fighting construction of the oil pipeline. The former presidential candidate compared the $3.7 billion pipeline to the failed Keystone XL pipeline proposal, which he also opposed. Sanders says the U.S. needs to find more renewable sources of energy rather than oil derived from fracking. Nearly 90 tribal nations have declared their support to those working to halt the pipeline since the Army Corps cleared construction of the 1,100-mile pipeline from North Dakota to Illinois. Hundreds of people from all over the country are gathered just outside the Standing Rock Reservation in opposition to the start of construction there. A federal judge is expected to rule within the next 2 weeks on Standing Rock's request for an injunction against the pipeline plan on procedural grounds. The pipeline company, Dakota Access LLC, also won a temporary restraining order against Standing Rock officials and other protesters. Sentences range from jail time to probation to restitution payments for 10 former Navajo Nation leaders, Andy Murphy reports.
A Winter Rock District Court judge handed down the sentences this week in the 2010 bribery and conspiracy case. The judge delayed sentencing for five others in the case. In all, 13 former Navajo Nation council members and two staff members pleaded guilty to criminal charges over misuse of an assistance fund set up to help disadvantaged families. In one case, family members of Delegate Orlando Smith Hodge received more than $100,000 from the fund. The Farmington Daily Times reports the judge ordered her to pay nearly $25,000 in restitution for the money that went to a child in her household whose bank account she had access to. Prosecutors were seeking nearly $100,000 from Ernest Yazzie. The judge also sentenced him to a year of probation. The stiffest jail sentence went to Leonard Teller, who will spend 180 days behind bars. He'll also have to pay $10,000 in restitution. All of those sentenced will have to write a letter of apology to their constituents and attend a class in life values. For National Native News, I'm Andy Murphy.
Tribal police worked with Arizona and federal officials to destroy more than 2,400 illegal marijuana plants growing on the Fort Apache Indian Reservation. The Arizona Republic reports the plants have a street value of some $3 million. Law enforcement officials with the White Mountain Apache Tribe, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and the Arizona Department of Public Safety hiked into a grow site, uprooted the plants, and used a helicopter to remove them. It took several flights to take all the plants to a place on the reservation where they were destroyed. The paper reports the operation started after a report of an encounter with three armed men, one reported to be a tribal member, near the cultivation site. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources will close the walleye catch-and-release fishing season early on Lake Mille Lacs after eight Chippewa bands expressed concerns. The Prior Lake American reports tribal leaders say heavy fishing on the lake and warmer-than-normal water temperatures increased the state's own mortality estimates for walleye to more than 45,000 pounds. That's almost three times the state quota. More than five dozen inmates attended the first powwow at the Two Rivers Correctional Institution in Umatilla, Oregon. The East Oregonian reports the event attracted at least 50 guests and more than two dozen representatives from nearby tribes. The prison chaplain says the powwow took nearly a year of planning. The Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation provided traditional foods, including salmon. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the year-long celebration of Native American artist Lloyd Kiva Nu at the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture, the IAIA Museum of Contemporary Native Arts, and the New Mexico Museum of Art. Info at nmculture.org/LKN.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to a Juno afternoon. Our first guest in the studio is Amy Page, here to talk about the Girls on the Run fundraiser. Amy, thanks for coming down today.
Thank you for having me.
So, usually we get people to talk about the Girls on the Run program itself, but this is something different. This is a fundraiser.
That's right. I represent the Girls on the Run Steering Committee. There's a group of us that are working together not only to guide the organization in its day-to-day activities, but also to ensure that the organization itself has enough funding to continue operating not only in Juneau but in Greater Alaska, which is our coverage area. So this fundraiser will be an opportunity for Juneau to help raise money to provide scholarships for girls in Juneau to participate in the program.
And the whole program is celebrating a million girls?
That's right. In 2016, Girls on the Run served its millionth girl. It's a program that began in 2008 with the goal of teaching girls confidence and empowering girls through fun games and running activities and teaching them a healthy lifestyle that ensures that girls specifically have confidence in their ability to do whatever it is they choose. It is a powerful program.
Why are you involved?
Because I'm a girl on the run. I am a runner, and through running, I've learned confidence, I've learned goal making, I've learned how to achieve things that I never expected. If this program had existed when I was a girl, I'm confident it wouldn't have taken me, 34 years to learn all of those skills. So to the best that I can, I appreciate the opportunity to give back to these kids, and hopefully they can get on the same track as I have been lucky to find earlier than I took.
When is the actual event?
The event is tomorrow. It is August 27th at Thunder Mountain High School from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. And what it is specifically is that there are a number of local vendors who are coming together to donate a portion of their proceeds to Girls on the Run of Greater Alaska. The vendors that we're working with this year include LuLaRoe, Perfectly Posh Nails, Princess House, 31, Stella and Dot, plus my two favorites, Peterson's Pretzels and Glacial Grinds, who are going to be providing snacks for the event. We're so excited that local vendors are coming out to support the cause.
You didn't bring any pretzels with you, didn't you?
I didn't bring any pretzels. I'm excited to get my fill tomorrow, though.
What time does it start?
It starts at 1 p.m. in the afternoon.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It should be fun. There are tons of vendors, more than the ones I've even mentioned. Anything you could want for your home, for beauty, for clothing. Plus, like I said, if you're not interested in doing your nails or wearing comfy leggings, everybody loves pretzels and everybody loves shaved ice.
It sounds like a good opportunity for men in the household to
absolutely
get presents.
Absolutely.
And how long is the event?
I'm sorry?
How long is the event?
It's from 1 to 4 in the afternoon, so a good amount of time for folks to come on out and support Girls on the Run. We're very excited. We'll have Girls on the Run merchandise there as well, so if you're interested in supporting through wearing a T-shirt or a hoodie, we'll have that available for folks as well.
So what's the timeline for the Girls on the Run program?
Girls on the Run, actually, we're having a coaches training for Girls on the Run on August 28th, so this Sunday. So if anybody is interested in being a coach for Girls on the Run, they should contact Rachel Wintz at AWARE. The program runs consistent with the school semester, so in the next couple of weeks after the coaches have been trained, the program will actually begin. It's a 12-week program that runs from about the middle of September through the beginning of December, and in December we have our celebratory 5K where the community and the girls get together. We run a 5K together to celebrate their achievement. It's a great time, and if people want to come out and volunteer for that, there's face painting and games and decorations and poster making and just cheering if you're a person who likes to cheer. It's a great event, and it's so fun.
And you've got volunteers as coaches.
We do need volunteers for coaches. We need volunteers just generally to help maintain the program, make coach boxes, make packets for the program. If you wanted to be a fundraiser for Girls on the Run, you could be a soulmate, which means you could train for an event, and while you're training for that event, you could raise money to support the effort. All kinds of opportunities to participate in this great program, whether you're a runner or not.
Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, thank you so much. We appreciate the time, and we really hope to see everybody out at Thunder Mountain High School tomorrow from 1 to 4 p.m. It's going to be a wonderful event. Thank you so much.
And if people need to get hold of you to ask questions, they can come out to the event tomorrow, or they can call somebody.
Absolutely. If folks want more information, they can come out tomorrow, or they can contact Rachel Wintz at AWARE. Her number is 486-4902. Or they can go to Girls on the Run of Greater Alaska's website, which is GOTRGreaterAlaska.org. And again, as always, thank you so much to AWARE for supporting this great program. It really is a valuable one for our community.
Amy Page, thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 26th of August, 2016. It's the birthday of the French poet who gave us the term surrealism and who spent a good part of his life trying to irritate and challenge the bourgeoisie, Guillaume Apollinaire, born 1880 in Rome. It's the birthday of the inventor Lee DeForest, born Council Bluffs, Iowa, 1873, called the father of radio because he invented the Audion vacuum tube, which, before the transistor came along in the 1940s, was the chief component involved in transmitting, receiving, and amplifying radio signals. 1873, on this date, the school board in St. Louis, Missouri, authorized the first public kindergarten in the United States. Under the influence of a woman named Susan Blow, she came from a wealthy St. Louis family. She was impressed with the work of a German educator named Friedrich Froebel, who invented the kindergarten, a garden of children. And so, with the help of the school board in St. Louis, she set up a bright, colorful classroom with kid-sized tables and benches, and she supervised it at her own expense for 11 years. It's the birthday of the Roman Catholic nun and missionary Mother Teresa, born in Macedonia in 1910, which was then part of the Ottoman Empire. She was born with a club foot, born into poverty, took her first vows as a nun when she was 21 years old, after which she never saw her mother or her sister ever again. She was in Calcutta, where she was horrified by the poverty she saw around her, and she had a vision while she was riding a train into Calcutta. She said, "I was to leave the convent and help the poor while living among them." She gave up her traditional habit. She began wearing a simple white cotton sari, ministering to the poor, the sick, the hungry, on the streets of the city, and she founded an order called the Missionaries of Charity. She began with 13 women. She opened orphanages and homes for lepers, soup kitchens, mobile health clinics, schools, hospices. 1979, she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, which she accepted, but she asked that they cancel the gala dinner and donate the money to charity instead. The committee asked Mother Teresa what people should do to promote peace, and she said, "Go home and love your family." Here's a poem for today by Sue Ellen Thompson entitled Sewing. The night before my older sister's wedding, my mother and I sat up late, hand stitching a little cloud of netting to the brim of each bridesmaid's hat. To be alone with her was so rare, I couldn't think of what I had to say. We worked in silence beneath the chandelier until it was almost daybreak. Soon I'd have a room of my own, and she would only be cooking for six. We drifted among the wreaths we had sown, nursing quietly on her fingertips. That she still had me was a comfort, I think, and I still had her. Sewing, a poem by Sue Ellen Thompson from The Golden Hour, published by Autumn House Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles, at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The last little bit of summer with the Juno Symphony during a delightful afternoon of whale watching on our annual wildlife cruise on Saturday afternoon, September 3rd. View Southeast Alaska's spectacular wildlife, sip delicious wines, munch on hors d'oeuvres, and listen to live chamber music. Don't disappoint the whales. They are definitely planning to attend. Tickets and more information at junosymphony.org.
The Juno Arts and Humanities Council, in partnership with KRNN, is thrilled to bring Grammy-nominated musician Modest Yahoo to Juno on September 23rd.
One day.
Expect an intimate, supercharged performance that blends reggae, beatboxing, hip-hop, singer-songwriting, and a whole lot of soul. Tickets at the Jack and Hearthside Books. Modest Yahoo in Juno, September 23rd.
Early morning, not quite four. The farmer's up and out the door. On little farms all through the state, they're loading bushel, box and crate. While you're sleeping safe and sound, the farmer's driving to your town, bringing fresh grown, fresh picked food your way as the sun wakes up the day. At the farmer's market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood, it's Farmer's Market Good. And in the park, some local gents set up the tables and some tents. The little trucks come rolling in, and soon the market can begin. Flowers stripped from the flower bed, and some fragrant, still warm bread. And veggies of every shape and size, and delicious home-baked pies. At the farmer's market, close to home, all the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood, it's Farmer's Market Good.
Good for your breakfast, good for your lunch, good for your dinner too. Good for the farmer, good for the family, best of all, good for you. The market changes every week, depending what crop's at its peak. First is rhubarb, lettuce, peas, and spinach, and strawberries. The local peaches are so nice. Watermelon by the slice, heirloom tomatoes, corn so tall, and apples in the fall.
Good for your breakfast, good for your lunch, good for your dinner too. Good for the farmer, good for the family, best of all, good for you.
So if it's still a bit too hard to try and till your whole backyard, there is a place right down the street where all your savvy neighbors meet. Like the seeds that the farmer sows, your whole community will grow.
Cause beside all the best that the farmer sends, you'll find a brand new crop of friends at the farmer's market, close to home. All the food you'll find there is locally grown. Like a farm once a week in your neighborhood. It's Farmer's Market. Farmer's Market. Good for the farmer, good for your family. Farmer's Market, good.
Tom Capen. In the studio with me now, Rachel Utzler and Emily Ferry, here to talk about tomorrow's Food Fest.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for coming by.
Sure. Yes, tomorrow is going to be a very exciting day. It is a food festival. It also looks like it's going to be nice weather, which is going to be really fantastic. And we have quite a list of vendors showing up tomorrow and lots of vegetables.
Give us an overview of the whole thing.
Well, overview of the whole thing. Basically, this is a festival that's just celebrating sustainable food and sustainable products in Southeast Alaska. And so we try to work with a lot and bring in as many growers as we can. But as you know, oftentimes we don't have the best growing seasons whatsoever. But this year, it seems like normally we only have about three or four different growers, and we brought about five or six different growers with an extra all kinds of different arts and crafts going on here.
What kind of things do they grow?
Well, we've got a whole list of different things. We have, Orsi Farms is a staple of this festival, and they are going to be here with, what do they have this year? It's all organic. They have garlic bulbs. They're also going to be doing salt and powder. They've got raspberry jam. They've got potatoes, shallots, tomatoes, cucumbers, zucchini, and carrots. We've got Farmers Eli Panhandle Produce. They're going to be showing up, and they will have fresh cucumbers, tomatoes, peas, carrots, potatoes, peppers, and will bring their hydroponically grown lettuce and basil. And they will also have three varieties of homemade pickles. Merriweather Farms will be here, and they are all grown out of Gustavus. And they will have fresh heirloom cabbages, beets, carrots, leeks, green beans, kale, and garlic. And they will also have a little bit of raw honey, which I'm very excited about. That will be a real delicacy from Gustavus. We also have some different fun, like besides those growers. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the Gustavus potatoes in. They got the guy who Dan Lesh was doing them. He couldn't fly back over to Gustavus to harvest the other day because he got fogged out. So we're going to be missing those potatoes. But we will have a bunch of other products. This is a new one for us this year, is the Wild Alaska Kelp. And they're going to be offering handcrafted foods featuring highly nutritious, locally harvested bull kelp seaweed. They have kelp salsas, pickles, and relish. Sounds fantastic. We also, besides those farms, we have got lots of lists of businesses here going on. We've got a lot of gardening groups. All the gardening groups are going to be represented. We have Rotary Bulbs. We have the Juno Community Gardens. We have the Jensen Olson Arboretum. We have the Juno Garden Club. We have the Douglas Community Gardens. All of those are going to be there. We have the UAF Cooperative Extension Service. They will have a lot of information, as well as SEAC. You guys are going to be right next to each other. Why don't you tell us what we're going to have at SEAC?
Excellent. Hi, Jeff. At the SEAC booth, we're going to have some samples of tasty salmon dip donated by Taku Ooh. Smokeries. And I have my daughter, Sana, here, who's modeling our We Eat Fish hat.
Very lovely.
We Eat Fish is not just a true statement about Alaskans and Alaska lifestyle, but it's also a campaign initiative that we're working on. So come on by, check out our merchandise, get some salmon, and we'll tell you a little bit about our campaign and why I am holding plastic fish in my hand.
I'm like, it looks really greasy, but it's not.
Yes, I have some plastic fish of different sizes, and this relates to our water quality, and the health of our fishing communities. I'd love to tell you all about it.
Yes,
at our booth tomorrow.
Very exciting. This is why we have the informational loops going on there.
Right.
Because salmon is one of our locally harvested foods around here. No, that's all we eat at my house.
What other booths?
We do have other booths going on. We have a new group that's coming, or a new printed design product is Marms and Meeks. That's actually Megan, who works over at the Jack. She's been starting her own little design stuff. Let's see, we also have Riverside Herbs. This is a great time to pick up all your oils and vinegars from Bonnie. She has a huge collection of those. The Jack is actually going to have our booth. We're going to be selling some of our kitchen gear that we have going on. We're also going to be doing a little bit of a giveaway just because we want you to fill out this survey. You turn in a survey, we will put you in a drawing for a Jack Gear giveaway. We're also really excited about having the MK's grocery bags, which we will be having, which is in a partnership with IGA, and all of that, the proceeds go back a little bit to the artist and then also to the Food in Schools program. I'm not sure exactly what Food in Schools, but there is one of these programs that it will be going back to. We will also at the Jack booth have some Chef Steph toffee, and I will also have some Happy Camper granola going on there, just so we can help all of those people out that can't actually be there. Let's see, we also have a couple other artist booths. We have Raven Lunatic, which will have wooden ravens. We have Red Onion, which is our local urban spice company in town. I know oftentimes she brings lots of really great lemonades. We have Bittersweet, which sounds as a bake sale type of stuff. We have Carol Shriver, who does different kind of handmade rugs, I'm told. And then we have the Novaks showing up for the first year because they were like, wow, we've been making this stuff and we didn't know we had a place to sell it. So Scott's Botanical Arts is going to have Devil's Club Salve and Yarrow Mosquito Repellent, which I'm very excited to try. And Cheryl's Garden is going to have garlic, potatoes, and she has a whole bunch of air plants that she's going to be selling to people. And then we have a couple other artists. There's Stephen Evans. He does leather work and jewelry. And we've got the JDHS Art Club. They completely cranked out a bunch of work, and even though they only started school 2 weeks ago, done a firing already, and it's ready to go, and they will have student-made ceramic ware there. And then I got a new one that will actually be outside. They just called me today and said we'd rather be outside, and I don't blame them because it's going to be gorgeous tomorrow. But AK Reuse is showing up, and they're going to be spreading the word about their community compost project that they are going to be doing. And they're also going to be selling garlic from Shelter Island.
And this plastic sanitizer is really good.
And it does, yes. I'm sure we'll be seeing some of that around. But then one other thing, besides all of the vendors and things that are going on, we're also going to be having workshops in the gallery like we do, but these ones sound like they're really exciting. At 9:15, we'll have a 45-minute workshop on foraging through the seasons, which will be taught by Corrine Conlin. They're also going to be having an actual retreat out the road on Sunday, and there's still a little bit of space available for that, so you can learn a little bit more about that foraging and that workshop that's going to be happening out the road, and that'll be at 9:15. And then at 10:15, I'm actually going to do a short little blurb on drinking vinegars and bitters, because as a former brewer, I can't stop making things to drink. And then we're going to have Sarah Lewis. She's works with UAF, Cooperative Extension Service. She's going to be doing pickling and fermenting at 11 o'clock. And then I talked Ed Bajarski into doing one on seed collection and saving, because I heard that on Garden Talk one day, and I'm like, wow, I want to know more about this. So I asked Ed if he would do one, and he said yes, he would. So at noon, we're going to have a class on seed collection and saving. And then I'm kind of excited. This is a new thing that we're doing with the workshops. I'm interspersing with a short film that was made by Greg Cheney the other day. I found out that he played this at the Jump, and I was like, wow, it's a food-oriented thing. It's about his stone oven that he built on Shelter Island. And so it's this small little short that goes through, and I'll just be playing that in between the workshops. We'll be doing a viewing at 10:10, 10:50, and 11:50.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long did it take to put something like this together?
Well, I've been working on it all day, and I'm going to go back there and keep working on it. Basically, it's a few months in a process. Lots of vendors are a lot of like the last minute because you don't know if you're going to have a lot of produce and you don't know if you can make all your stuff and get everything together. But in the last few weeks, people have been coming out of the woodwork and it's really going to turn out to be a great festival.
What's the biggest and smallest things that people bring?
The biggest and smallest things? I don't know. Well, Ed, he brings in trees.
Maybe
so that
kind of
counts. That would be pretty big. Small? I don't know. Blueberries?
Seeds.
Ed, oh, yes.
Ed brings seeds
yes.
as well.
Ed brings seeds. And actually, at the Douglas Community Gardens, I actually do work for Ed Hume also, and I'm involved with Douglas Community Gardens. And we have, Ed Hume is a really great seed company that gives away all their extra seeds. I don't bother throwing them away or anything at the end of the season, and they let me donate them. So we will have some free seeds available at Douglas Community Gardens table also.
And then they're going to be there too.
We are. So I'm with the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council again, and our Inside Passage Waterkeeper program has been working hard to keep Alaska's clean water clean. So we're going to be talking a little bit about the work we're doing, but also celebrating the great stuff that comes out of those clean oceans. So, again, we'll have a lot of real salmon for people to sample. And then as my
really
6-year-old daughter is holding up a big piece of plastic fake salmon. And
it
also
looks really edible.
Yes. So the big piece is about 250 grams of salmon. That looks like a good, healthy dinner. And then we have a little cube of salmon here that's about one single bite. And bizarrely right now, the state of Alaska says most Alaskans eat this much, 6.5 grams of salmon per person per day. So again, that's about one bite. And most people have that
most
same look, Rachel.
Most people eat a little more than that, I would think.
That's
a very tiny piece of smoked salmon.
And it's an important number because it affects how we regulate and protect our water. The more fish a population eats, the fewer bioaccumulative toxins you want to allow in your water. So we need to get that number up a little bit higher and more accurate so that we're protecting our clean water and that we continue to have some of the best seafood in the entire world. And we also have really cute hats and some other gear to pick up.
The hats don't taste as good as the salmon, though.
Probably not. Probably not as tasty.
But the plastic, too, really.
So what time does the festivities start tomorrow?
Oh, the festivities start at 9 o'clock, and they're going to end at 1. So make sure that you get there early. We do know we're shutting down just an hour earlier this year because everyone started selling out of their vegetables. So you do want to get there early to get your vegetables. But hopefully there'll be enough for everyone. And I'm very excited about all this information going on, too.
And if people need more information,
call us down at the Jack, jahc.org. I do have a whole bunch of lists. I have the list of vendors and the workshops already posted on our website.
Aren't you good?
I'm getting there.
All right, thanks everybody for coming down.
Thanks, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. Gordon Hempton, the sound tracker, seeks those rare places untouched by human noise where birds and nature create a complex, quiet music.
One square inch of silence is a real place. It's up the Ho Valley, a rainforest, in Olympic National Park. It is a place that is home to Earth's tallest trees. And it's also the least noise-polluted place in all of the lower 48. It is an area that I'm trying to preserve. Isn't it amazing to think that on all of planet Earth, there is not one place off limits to noise pollution? And air traffic is the number one violator. The noise-free interval, which is the measure of quiet at the one square inch of silence, has shrunk from in 2007. It was commonly over an hour. Now, because of the increased frequencies of flights, it's barely 20 minutes. We will see the complete loss of quiet, natural silence in the United States unless we do something. And there are no bad guys here. There just are people that are not paying attention to the importance of silence.
Today's sounds were recorded by Gordon Hempton of QuietPlanet.com. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann.
Support for programming on KTOO comes from listeners like you and the Juneau Empire, serving the capital city in print, online, and social media. Facebook.com/JuneauEmpire and at Juneau Empire on Twitter and Instagram.
It's 35 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned to Juneau Afternoon here today. What a great sunny day it is, indeed. Bishop Edward Burns is here in the studio to talk about Blue Mass, which is coming up on Sunday.
Sure. Thanks, Jeff, and it's wonderful to be here. This Sunday, on August 28th, we're going to have a Blue Mass at St. Paul the Apostle Church in the Valley. And the Blue Mass is indicative of the people who we're honoring, and that is the men and women in uniform. And blue, significant of the many of the uniforms that that people wear. And the people in uniform, we're going to, we have invited all our first responders, those who respond to any type of accidents that occur in the community, as well as law enforcement agencies. And we have our Juneau Police Department invited, and a number of them turn out, as well as our fire department and those who serve our community when there is a fire. We also have the military invited, and anybody a part of the military, in particular the Coast Guard, because Juneau and all of Southeast Alaska is so ably served, you know, by them. And so anyone who really puts their life on the line in order to serve us, to help us with our well-being, our safety, and safeguard our freedom, these are the people who we're going to honor. And the very essence of the Blue Mass is to ask God's blessing upon them and their family members, and to express our appreciation as a community for all that they do. And everyone's invited.
When does it start?
It starts at 10:30 in the morning. It's our 10:30 Mass at St. Paul the Apostle Church. It's on Egan and oh my gosh, I just
Glacier Highway.
Sure, it's right the Loop Road. Yeah.
Where did the idea come from?
I'm sorry?
Where did the idea come from?
Well, actually, in the Catholic tradition, we have a number of masses whereby we uphold certain professions. The Blue Mass, again, because of what they wear, is for those in uniform. We also have what is called a Red Mass. And a Red Mass is for those who serve our community as lawyers, attorneys, and legislators. And the title Red comes from St. Thomas More. St. Thomas More, who was the chancellor for King Henry VIII, and ultimately gave his life for standing up for the truth. As you well know, St. Thomas More was beheaded. But it really is standing up for truth, and that's indeed what we see in attorneys and lawyers and our legislators, God willing. Then we also have a White Mass, and a White Mass in the Catholic tradition is for those in the medical field, you know, those who serve us in our need, in the hospitals, in the clinics, in all that they do. So what we like to do within the Catholic tradition is really uphold those who serve us in community, those who work for the common good and for our specific needs.
You don't have one for radio announcers, do you?
I'm sorry?
You don't have one for radio announcers.
You know what? It's interesting that within our tradition, we do highlight a patron saint for radio announcers. And the patron saint of radio announcers is none other than the Archangel Gabriel. Because the Archangel Gabriel was the one who came to Mary with the message that she was going to be with child. So, indeed, there is a patron saint for radio announcers.
Good to know.
Way to go, Jeff.
Starts at 10:30 on a Sunday morning. What's the schedule for the Morning.
So what's going to happen, we simply gather at 10:30. Mass will be as usual. We have, of course, a special prayer for those who come in uniform and for those who serve us in the community. And towards the end of Mass, what we're going to do is we're going to then process out of the church out into the parking lot, because out in the parking lot, there will be a number of emergency response vehicles and vessels. And what we do is we will go out and we will bless those vehicles and vessels. Really asking God's protection upon those who really risk their lives in order to help us when we are in peril or in danger. We will sing a patriotic hymn, and then we will come back into the narthex of the church for a reception and enjoy each other's company and really have an opportunity to personally thank the men and women in uniform for what they do for our community.
Sounds fantastic. Thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, my gosh, you're very thorough, and I'm grateful for this opportunity to share this information with the community, so thank you so much.
How long is the event?
How long is it? Well, it depends on how long I preach. No. You know what? It would probably be about an hour and a half.
All right. Well, I'll let you go practice.
Sounds good. Thank you.
About 46 minutes past the hour, you are tuned to a Juno Afternoon. Our next guests in the studio are here from Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts. We've got Eric, Micah, and Jeff Brown. Thank you for coming down the station.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
So tell us what the Scouts do in Juno.
Oh, gosh. The Scouts in Juno do a lot of things.
I get an idea. Let's get our Scouts to us.
We're very blessed to live in such a wonderful community that affords the Scouts such wonderful outdoor opportunities. So it's pretty great opportunity to be a Boy Scout in Juno or a Cub Scout. Right now, we are recruiting for a Cub Scouts. This is our fall membership drive right now. So we're going around to all of the local elementary schools and talking to all the boys in first through fifth grade and encouraging them to join Cub Scouts. Also, Boy Scouts are from 6th to 12th grade. It's never too late to join. You didn't have to start in first grade to join in 12th grade. You can join anytime. We have a couple of membership join nights coming up that I just wanted to mention. At Mendenhall River Community School, we'll be meeting on August 31st at 6:30. We're also meeting at Gastineau Elementary School on the 9th. And we have a complete listing of everything, all of our joining opportunities on our website at scoutingalaska.org. And if you go to the district tabs, you select the Maritime District. You can also find us on Facebook for a complete listing of all of our join opportunities in town. Just search for the Maritime District Great Alaska Council on Facebook. On our Facebook page, you'll find all of our upcoming events. We have Cub Scout Day Camp coming up. We have Boy Scout Camporee coming up in October. And they're all wonderful, fun opportunities. We also, right now, are selling popcorn as our annual fundraiser for Scouts. And we have my very own Boy Scout, Micah Brown, here to talk about popcorn.
What kind of popcorn is there available?
We have chocolatey caramel crunch, white chocolatey pretzels. We also have some trail mix this year. We have microwavable, unbelievable butter popcorn. And we have premium caramel corn, which comes with almonds and cashews and pecans and stuff. Then we have poppin' corn and jalapeno cheddar cheese corn. Then we have white cheddar cheese corn. And we also have classic caramel corn. And we have a chocolate lover's tin, which comes with all the chocolate popcorn. Then we have a sweet and savory collection, which comes with white cheddar cheese corn, chocolatey caramel crunch, and butter toffee caramel corn. Then we have cheese lovers, which comes with white cheddar cheese corn, white cheddar cheese corn, jalapeno cheddar cheese corn.
Jalapeno is his favorite, right?
Yeah. We also have a military donation that you can donate any amount of money you want, and it'll go towards sending popcorn to troops overseas and their families and veterans from the military.
What's your favorite?
My favorite is probably the chocolate caramel crunch.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And where are you going to be selling this popcorn?
The Scouts are going around from door to door, doing door sales right now. We also, come mid-September, we'll have our storefront sales. You'll be able to find us at Fred Meyer and a couple other locations around town. And I just want to talk a little bit about the proceeds from the popcorn and how they benefit our local units. A big chunk of that stays local. It goes to the local Boy Scouts. And the different units decide what they want to use their funding for. Some of them use it to pay for all the kids to go to summer camp. Some of them allow the Scouts to choose what they want to use the funds for, such as purchasing new camping equipment or going down south to go to camp or something like that. And a portion of the proceeds also goes to support the Great Alaska Council, which is our parent organization for the Maritime District here in Juneau.
Eric, what are some of the things that you like to do as a Scout?
Well, I'm actually raising popcorn money for to go to the National Jamboree in West Virginia, and that's next summer. And then we also just got back, our troop got back from a 225-mile canoe trip down the Teslin and Yukon Rivers. Wow. Which was a really fun trip. And lots of the other scout troops, I know, I think 700 Medicine Skagway, because they just had done the Chilkoot Trail. So all the troops around town are doing lots of fun stuff during the summer. And lots of the troops go to the Frostbite Challenge up in the White Pass in the Yukon Territory in March. And we dig snow caves and a big snow bank and sleep in those for two nights and stay for like 3 days.
Why are you a scout?
I'm a scout. I think the first reason I joined scouting is because my dad kind of convinced me, because he was a scout when he was a boy. And it's just kind of been a fun experience for me with all the outdoor activities and camping. It's just kind of been a really fun opportunity. And I learned lots of outdoor skills from Boy Scouts.
I think Eric brings up a good point, too, about his dad being a scout and encouraging him. It's a great family opportunity, too. It's not just an experience for the boys, because we rely heavily on our volunteers. It's all, you know, Boy Scouts is all volunteers. And, you know, one of the reasons why I work for the Boy Scouts now is because I started out as a volunteer with my children. And it was such a fun time that I thought, hey, why not give this gig a shot? So, you know, it's great for moms and dads alike and siblings. We all have fun on all the adventures. We welcome family at all of our events.
You certainly got a super facility out there, the Boy Scout camp.
We have a wonderful Boy Scout camp. We just got back off of a great camp season.
Mm-hmm.
We had kayaking, canoeing, shooting sports, handicraft, and we had merit badges taught by all kinds of local organizations. ADF&G came out and taught us about mammals, and they did fishing for Cub Scout camp, and the Coast Guard taught search and rescue. So we have a lot of community involvement from different organizations in town that makes Cub Scouting and Boy Scouting alike just a real community affair.
Yeah. We also just got, 2 years ago, we just got a new washhouse out at the Boy Scout camp, so everybody's are more encouraged to take showers, so everybody's smell is not as bad.
No more stinky feet in the tents at night.
Micah, what's your favorite thing to do as a scout?
I like going to camp and earning badges for Boy Scouts, because it helps you advance in your ranks.
How many badges do you have, and what are they in?
I have 4 right now, I'm pretty sure, and they're in leatherwork, woodwork, fingerprinting, and...
Do you do oceanography, too?
Yeah, I'm working on oceanography right now. Yeah.
Sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
Why, now I want you to, for the kids listening in the audience and the parents, too, we're on the fence about joining the Boy Scouts. Why should people join the Boy Scouts? And you can...
It's really fun. You get to go to camp and do archery and shoot BB guns and all that stuff.
And it extends beyond camp also. We have den meetings. Some of the dens meet once a week. We have pack meetings monthly with some of the packs. And as their unit, as an individual unit, they do things together like go on hikes or go on fishing trips. And, you know, the possibilities are really endless. And it's not just about the outdoor skills, too. We're also really trying to teach these kids how to be good stewards of their community, to give back in any way that they can, to do service projects. It's a great program.
How about you, Eric? Your sales pitch to the Boy Scouts?
Well, just being in Boy Scouts can help you be a better person in general. It also teaches you lots of great outdoor skills. And if you become an Eagle Scout with the Boy Scouts, you automatically get a higher rank than everybody else when you join the military. So that's kind of
a perk if you decide to go
perk,
that direction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And so if people need more information, how can they do that?
You can go to our website, scoutingalaska.org, under the Maritime District, or our Facebook page, Maritime District on Facebook. And again, we have our join nights coming up at all the local elementary schools, Harborview, Gastineau, River Bend, Mendenhall River. Just look on there and you'll find the dates. They're coming up in the next 2 weeks about in Juneau. And it will, beyond that, we'll extend to the rest of Southeast Alaska after that. We have units, we have a unit that we're developing in Haines right now. Skagway has a local pack and troop there. Sitka has wonderful scouting people involved. And if you ever, if you are in the outside communities outside of Juneau and you have an interest in starting a unit where there isn't one, that is definitely doable. If there are people that want to do it, we can make it happen.
All right. Thank you so much for coming down. We talked to Eric, Micah, and Jennifer.
Thank you, Jeff.
Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
Oh, gosh, I don't think so. Check out our website. You'll find all kinds of information.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and